Yeah, okay. A couple honest people, that's good. Some of you just quit making them, you know. I want to talk to you this morning about one of my very favorite texts in the Old Testament. But before we look at God's answer, we have to listen to God's question. Have you ever wondered in your life if God really cares about you? Ever wondered if he really cares about me? That's an important question. And I hope that we'll arrive at where the writer of Hebrews arrives, that he is an anchor for the soul, firm and secure. This week, Brent and I were talking about Vicki. Vicki was my secretary almost 20 years ago. And I remember the day that she walked into my office. She was such a bubbly, vivacious person. And she came in and with her husband, and she had tears. And I'm thinking, that's not Vicki. She goes, we need to talk to you. I said, okay. So she came into the office, and she said, Steve, I have cancer. It's pretty advanced. Wow. I prayed. Our church prayed. Vicki was a warrior. She lost all of her hair. She'd wear a scarf. She insisted on coming to work, and we let her come even though sometimes she couldn't do much. She worked till the week before she died. At age 51, Vicki went to meet Jesus. I did not understand, and I saw what is God up to look on the faces of the people in that service that day. Yet Vicki's faith and trust in the Lord never wavered. I've noticed that same look on people's faces for many years before that funeral and many years after that funeral. Brian Jones, in his powerful book, Second Guessing God, states that when people doubt the existence of goodness of God or his plan for their lives, one of three things has happened. One of them is disappointment. Life just doesn't turn out the way you expected, the way you planned, and how you thought it was going to be. All of us know someone whose life has been a little disappointing to themselves and to others. The one voted most likely to succeed in high school didn't. Dan and I attended the same college, and we were friends. He was a year older than me. He was a bright enough guy, kind of quiet. Lost track of him after college, and I was pastoring in Clearwater, and 6 years after I was there, suddenly Dan showed up in service one day with his wife. He was working as a drywaller, hanging drywall. And I remember that he would often say to me, I have a college degree. I can't believe how my life has turned out. There's nothing wrong with being a drywaller, it's just that that wasn't his plan. That's not what he thought his life was going to be. It's not rare to find people who are disappointed with their lives. For people of faith, disappointment with life can be a very difficult problem for us. If we believe God changes things, why is my life kind of mediocre? Often disappointed folks of faith begin to doubt God's goodness and God's power. It's easy for disappointed folks to become passionless, or even worse, to become bitter or cynical about life and God. So some folks are disappointed. Other folks are broken, and that causes us to ask that question, where is God? Life has not only been unfair and disappointing, but for some people, it's like they've been run over by the wheels of life, and they've been left broken. The writer Anatole French writes in possibly what is the shortest poem on record, three words, born, suffered, died. Maybe you feel that poem could be written about your life or someone that you know. If so, you're not alone. A few years ago, I was asked to testify at a jury trial in Indianapolis for a good friend of mine, actually two good friends of mine. I'd never been in a court before, never, certainly not a criminal court case. And I was back with the defendants and their defense attorney waiting to come in. And it was going through my mind, here's two men who had given their life to the church. The one person that I knew well and that I was testifying for had been a very, very successful businessman. He had given up his job, taken a salary that was maybe 20% of what he was making because he felt God had called him to serve the church. But things had gone terribly wrong. There was an investigation. There were criminal charges made. And even though the judge ruled that neither of these men had benefited in any way financially, the jury convicted them of fraud. And I saw the look of brokenness. I saw the tears, the absolute hurt in their hearts. And somehow at that moment, where was God, the God they had tried to serve, and he seemed so far away at that particular moment? Then the third thing that causes us to ask that question is just devastation. Sometimes life isn't just disappointing, and sometimes it doesn't just break us. Sometimes it's just devastating to us. I thought about Sandy Patty's book about being broken on the back row of the church. It was her painful story of moral failure and that long and difficult road back to God. There are times when the pain and hurt in our life, we know we cause it. We did something or we failed to do something. It was our fault. But that's not always the case, is it? I remember the phone call I got from a young gal that I love dearly. And she was sobbing. She goes, "My husband has told me he doesn't love me anymore, and he's leaving me. He's filing for divorce." And she asked me the question, "How can God let this happen to me? I've been faithful. I don't understand." Disappointment, brokenness, devastation can cause anyone to doubt the goodness or cause us to question his plan. Well, before you get too morbid, I've got some really good news for you this morning. That no matter where you are, no matter what you're experiencing in life right now, no matter how far you feel away from God's presence, no matter how angry or bitter or cynical you may have become about life, no matter how much you feel like giving up or giving in to despair, I can promise you this morning there's one thing you can count on. Now, you folks are used to the clay and mud of Indiana, but if you ever go to Florida and you're on the beach and you stand in the water and the water comes in, as it goes out, it takes the sand away. If you're standing there long enough, pretty soon you begin to get a little wobbly because the sand disappears. But I can tell you as a person of faith, when the last grain of sand is gone, as a person of faith, you will find yourself staying on a solid rock of God's love and God's grace and God's power. You see, part of our struggle is that we have a different agenda than God. And that makes it hard for us sometimes. Our agenda is to be happy and fulfilled and safe, right? Sure. I mean, everybody would like to have that. We want to live at Lake Wobegon. Remember Lake Wobegon? There was a radio announcer that talks about this mythical place. His name was Garrison Keillor. And Keillor describes this place at Lake Wobegon as a place where the women are strong, the men are good looking, and all the children are above average. That's a place we want to live. The place where the sun always shines, where people get raises and diets always work. That's where we want to live. You know? Most of us would like for God to pack our bags and move us there and pay the closing costs for the place we buy. When we discover that God's agenda is not necessarily our personal happiness, we become confused about our faith. We begin to ask, where is God? We're not new asking the question. Listen to Psalm 77. Will the Lord reject forever? Will he never show his favor again? Has his unfailing love vanished forever? Has his promise failed for all time? Has God forgotten to be merciful? Has he in anger withheld his compassion? What is God's agenda for our lives? Well, I'm glad you ask, because his agenda is our transformation. God wants to transform us. He wants to shape us for his higher purpose for our lives. Listen to what Romans 12:2 says. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Well, how does that transformation take place? Well, I can tell you, it doesn't take place on the shores of Lake Wobegon. It really doesn't. In fact, in James, it tells us it takes place, and it's often the result of trials of many kinds. James writes, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete and lacking in nothing." I don't know about you, but trials of many kinds and counting it pure joy don't live in the same room very well for me. You know, that they don't seem exactly able to fit together well. When I think of pure joy, I usually don't think of trials. I think about going out to eat and somebody else pays the bill. You know, that's pure joy. Or enjoying a piece of peanut butter pie and getting on the scales and you lost a pound. That's pure joy. Or having the grandkids over and being able to send them home with their parents. Pure joy. Trying to help a couple hold their marriage together and watching it come apart. That's not pure joy. Praying for someone in the grips of an illness. Definitely not pure joy. So how can our agenda and God's agenda be so different? Yet he tells us the goal of his agenda is this, to complete us that we be lacking in nothing. So God's perspective is, we tend to see things in terms of the immediate moment, and God's agenda is not limited to time and space. He has eternity in mind. Perhaps Paul captures God's agenda best when he writes, "We have this treasure in jars of clay to show this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. We're hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not abandoned. Struck down, but not destroyed." Then Paul explains his optimism in the face of trials, and these words confound us a little bit. "For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all." I would venture to say when you're facing trials of many kinds, you don't call it light and momentary troubles. But Paul then shares that if you capture God's perspective and his goal, which is our transformation, we see things differently. In fact, he says, "So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen." God's agenda is much deeper than our happiness, which changes momentarily according to what happens to be happening in your life at that particular moment. It's clear that God allows us to go through difficult moments in this journey, but that's not the end of the story. His goal is to complete us and restore us to lasting joy. The big question, where is God? Where's God when I suffer? Where's God when I lose my job? Where's God when my marriage fails? Where is God when I get cancer? Where is God when I lose my spouse? Brian Jones each year passes out to his congregation the opportunity to ask for questions they have that they'd like to ask God. And I've always said I have a list that when I get to heaven, I want to ask God about. And he said it really is hard to preach a four-part sermon series because the questions seem to repeat themselves over and over again. And the big question, the number one question is, where is God when I'm going through this or this or this? Now the passage that I promised, that's my favorite, one of my favorites in the Old Testament. There's this amazing story of Joshua and God's people who have been slaves in Egypt and they've been set free. And if you remember, they were disobedient. They've been marching around the promised land for 40 years in the desert until the unbelieving generation dies off. And now it's the moment to finally move over into the promised land. Over a million people, and they're at the River Jordan. Now, normally the River Jordan is no big deal. It's not that big a river. But at flood stage, and it was at flood stage, it's over a mile wide. And God's instructions in this very dangerous water is for the priest to step into the floodwaters. Now, I'm sure that some of them were asking, why did God bring us out of Egypt to drown us in the Jordan River? That makes no sense. But the scriptures tell us, as soon as the priests who carried the ark touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap at a great distance away at a town called Adam in the vicinity of Zarethan. Now, this is where we sometimes get our Bible stories confused. Some of you are still at the Red Sea, and the waters part on both sides, and they walk through on dry land. You remember that story, right? You know, that's not this story. What it says is that there's not big stacks of water on both sides. Adam was 19 miles away. God stopped the water 19 miles away from where they stepped into the river. In other words, God promised a miracle, but it was 19 miles upstream, out of sight from where they were crossing. Why is this significant? It's significant because God is always working upstream in our lives. I like that thought. Say it with me. God is always working upstream in my life. Where's God when my life is falling apart? He's upstream, working on my behalf. We can't always see what God is doing. And often, all we see is the problem that's right in front of us, right? It's overwhelming. The tire's flat. How do I pay the electric bill? My kid's sick. What do I do? But God is at work outside our line of vision. And it becomes for us a matter of faith. Who are we going to trust? What are we going to trust? Often God is working upstream when we feel like our prayers are going nowhere. It's important to remember this promise again in Romans 8. And we know that in all things God works for good for those who love Him, who are called according to His purpose. There's two incredible truths there. One is we need to remember that God works in all things. Even the blunders, even the sins, even the brokenness and the failures. And His purpose is for our good. God is working behind the scenes and everything to try and bring about His purpose in our lives. Trials and tests and temptations have one common characteristic. They're temporary. They're temporary. You can outlast them. And when you do, there's this incredible reward awaiting you. God blesses the people who patiently endure testing, says in James. Afterward, they will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love Him. Part of living a life of faith is learning to trust what you can't see. I can't always see God working upstream in my life, but I'm convinced that He's working upstream for my good. Why? Because I've observed Him do it over and over again in my life and the life of others. A few years ago, Jim Lyon, who's the director of the Church of God, was speaking at the 100th anniversary of the Church of God in Guyana, this little South American country. The auditorium was packed for this 100th celebration anniversary, and as Jim was speaking, all of a sudden there was a murmur in the crowd. It always kind of worries you when you're the pastor, you know, that everybody's kind of talking all of a sudden, and this couple come forward, and everybody's obviously in awe of this couple. And when they get to the front of the church, he asks Jim if he can speak for a moment. He's the prime minister of Guyana. And he shares that he grew up in poverty. And it was a Church of God missionary who introduced him to Jesus. It transformed his life and certainly his future. And he just came that day to give thanks to the church. Later, Milton Graham, who's a fabulous preacher, shared. He too knew the prime minister because they were boys that grew up in poverty in Guyana, an impoverished neighborhood with no real hope for anything to change or anything to be different in their life. And Milton shares these words from 2 Timothy, "And the things you have heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to a reliable people who will also be qualified to teach others." And Milton Graham explained that when you entrust or trust something, it's different than a gift. It's a deposit that expects a return. The things that you have heard, deposit in others so that they will bring about a return. And he wanted to share how Herman Smith was the first missionary that he encountered. And he goes, what was so impressive about Herman Smith, he was 6'6". He was a giant of a man. And Herman Smith gathered together a group of junior boys, about 90 of them, 9 years old, had the first vacation Bible school in Guyana. And he invited this young boy, Milton, to be his helper. Come be my helper. The next day, Milton showed up in his very best clothes and his only pair of shoes that he owned because he was somebody. He was the preacher's helper. And he remained his helper until the day he preached Herman Smith's eulogy. Milton shared that Herman spoke of tithing, but Milton didn't have a job and he didn't have any money. So for years, on Saturdays, he walked 4 miles to Pastor Milton's house, to Pastor Herman's house. And there he would wash his dog and weed the garden. And that was his tithe. He did that for several years, every Saturday. And Herman Smith's wife made this statement to Milton. "Milton, I can't wait to attend your college graduation." College graduation. A poor kid that didn't have one pair of shoes and only one set of clothes, no money. And she believed he could go to college, and she made a deposit upstream in his life. And 2 masters and 3 earned doctorates later, God fulfilled that promise. When God is working upstream, it does not mean that everything is great while we wait for Him to make a way. Sometimes things are very difficult while we wait for Him to make a way. Milton's family wasn't happy that he was going to church. In fact, his father and his brothers waited for him to get out of church at night, and they would slap him around and tell him not to go back. They hit him so hard that he had to have several surgeries on his ear because it was damaged by the beatings. But he kept coming because he believed that God was at work on his behalf. And the end result is a powerful preacher who impacts thousands of people with his message of Jesus. When I first came to Monroe City, April 1st, can you believe that? One of the first questions that I heard repeated several times is, "Do you think you can find somebody who would come to this little place. And I answered you, I assured you that God had a person in mind. And as was shared, the search committee went through tons of resumes. I called every contact that I had and followed up every lead that I heard, made a lot of phone calls. And I sent an email to a young man that I'd been highly recommended to me, and no response. So we moved on to the two other good candidates. Then out of the blue, I get this phone call from Justin. He goes, Steve, I don't know you and you don't know me, and I just want to apologize. Somehow I lost your email. I just now found it 2 months later. And we talked for a while. And as we were talking, I began to feel like the old prophet Samuel when he went to Jesse's house. And he's looking at all the sons, who's going to be the next king? And they're all great guys, but God, the Spirit kept saying, there's somebody else. There's one more boy. Well, he's nobody. He's just a kid out taking care of the sheep. His name was David. As I talked to Justin, it's funny, we were just having a conversation, and he mentioned that he's from a small town with no stoplights. Corn farmer, his dad was a corn farmer in Kansas. Both of his grandfathers were Church of God pastors. I was so impressed. I said, man, you need to pray about this. He goes, well, I will. And he later told me and told our committee that he was pretty sure that Sarah, his wife, was going to say no because they're at the church where her parents live. And they serve on staff. And it was a long time getting there. And they serve on the staff of this huge church. And her parents are in the church. So he was sure that Sarah would say no. And he said the next morning, Sarah came down and said, I kind of think God wants us to consider Monroe City. I think God may be leading. The next prayer I had was, oh God, help him to be able to preach. And I tell you, I was blown away when I listened to his sermons. Amazing, humble man of God. So as has been said, the leadership of the church here has extended a call. I remember thinking, after all the searching, God was at work upstream, out of sight, with his particular plan. Because there's lots of distance between here and where he is. And I love it. But I want to encourage you to be praying diligently on two things. One, about your decision, but also that they will have comfort and peace, because it's a huge move. It's a huge move to move your family away from family to a new place. So be praying that the Spirit will lead him as he's led him to this point, where he's willing to be considered. Today you may be wondering, where is God? If you've committed your life to a life of faith, I can assure you that God is working upstream, out of sight, to bring about his plans and his purpose for you. But you can't work upstream. He can't work upstream until we let go. As long as we're trying to fix things in our own might and our own strength, then God can't bring about his plan and his purpose for us. And sometimes God's purpose is a little longer than our time frame. I've discovered that. If you read the book of Acts, all the miracles in the book of Acts, you say, wow. But the wow should be that there weren't more miracles, because it's over a 30-year period that the book of Acts is written. Sometimes we see God's hand immediately, but often it's not that clear. It may be years later that we discover that God was orchestrating things in our lives that we didn't see at that moment. Things that didn't make sense to us then become clear now. Paul says, now we see through the glass darkly, but one day it's going to be clear to you. Our task is to faithfully let go and let God. Brian Jones shares that as he was in college, he'd just gotten married, and his friends had gone off to the Middle East to visit, you know, the college thing, make a trip. And he couldn't go because he just got married, and they had no money. And when his friends got back, they were all living in the same apartment complex. And they said, Brian, can you come down and help us bring this rug in? We got such a deal. He goes, okay. So he goes down and he goes, it was a smelly old rug. And they said, man, we stole this thing. It's just a few hundred dollars. He goes, I wouldn't give you $10 for this thing. He goes, there was nothing to it. They said, no, this is the backside of the rug. Turn it over. And they rolled it out, and it was a real Persian rug. And he said it was the most beautiful thing he'd ever seen in his life. It truly was a treasure. I'm not sure what you're going through at this moment. I know some of your stories and what you're going through. And some of you are facing trials of many kinds. And I would also guess that some of you are insisting on working it out on your own. And some of you are hard-pressed on every side, and you're wondering, where is God? Well, let me share with you this wonderful truth. Someday, as a follower of Jesus, your life will end, my life will end, and God will welcome us into his forever presence. And when it happens, I think he'll do something like that. He'll say, let me show you something. Do you see the backside of this carpet? That was your life on earth. Do you remember the people who said some bad things about you and they really hurt your feelings and they hurt you so deeply? Do you remember how sick your husband was and he died? Do you remember that person that was so needy and at that time you had all the needy people you needed? You didn't want to hear one more needy person. You just want to be left alone. And then he will turn it over and he'll smile. This is what I was doing with your life. This is the big picture. You couldn't see it then, but you can see it now. Thank you for remaining faithful and patiently enduring the testing and the trials. Thank you for not giving up or losing your faith. That's what I was doing. I was working upstream in your life. As you face trials today, know this. God's at work. He hasn't abandoned you. He hadn't left you. He hadn't forgotten you. He's working upstream. Trust him. Follow him. Run after him with all your heart. Let's pray. Father, you're so good to us. Sometimes when we're going through the trials, and none of us enjoy it, it's not fun, but we know that you love us, and we know that you're at work in ways that we can't even begin to comprehend or understand. And I just pray this morning, Lord, that whoever's here today that's going through some stuff, that they'll let you work. They may want to come and pray today. We want to pray with them. That's what we're about, Lord, is to pray for each other because we know you're working upstream and sometimes we need courage to go through the trials. And I pray that whatever the need is this morning, that you would speak to folks. In Christ's name, amen. Stand with me.